I'd like to raise three questions on this week's parsha or parshios of Tzadriya Metzora. The first is a question of context, of why two items are placed near each other. We know that the major part of Parsha Tzadriya, and as well as Parsha Metzora, is the laws of Tzaraat, the laws of leprosy that afflict a person. And we know in particular that Tzaraat happens to a person who speaks Lashon Hara. There are many things that Tzaraat, leprosy is really the wrong word. It's more of a spiritual disease. But if it's particularly the major item is for a person who speaks Lashon Hara. And that's the major focus of Parsha Tzadriya Metzora, are the different aspects of what the affliction looks like and how to go through a process of purification. If that's the major aspects of Parsha Tzadriya Metzora, so question number one is, why does the Parsha begin with the laws of giving birth? If we take a look in source number one, the Parsha begins with Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, speak to the children of Israel saying, when a woman conceives and gives birth to a male, she shall be contaminated for a 7-day period, as during the days of her separation infirmity shall she be contaminated. With the mitzvah bris milah on the 8th day, the flesh of the foreskin shall be circumcised. And then she waits another 33 days, and then she comes into the sanctuary and purifies herself through bringing sacrifices as part of the process. And if she gives birth to a female, we know that the whole process is doubled. Instead of 7 days, it's 14 days and 66 days. And right after this law comes the law of Tzaraat. So question number one is, what is the connection between the laws of giving birth and the laws of leprosy? Why did the Torah juxtapose these two laws together? That's question one. Within that question, which is a very famous question, is it seems like real discrimination here. That for a boy, you're impure for X amount of time. And for a girl, you're impure for double the amount of time. It doesn't seem to be too fair. That's question one. Question two is, in the purification process, which is the beginning of Parsha Metzora, we find in source three, that the Kohen shall command, and for the person being purified, there shall be taken two live clean birds, cedar wood, crimson thread, hyssop, and a whole ceremony goes on. Question number two is, what is the significance of all these items? Why is he taking a bird, the cedar wood, the hyssop? These aren't, put together whatever items we can think about. Clearly, and as the Al-Shulchan Kadosh and his commentator, which we'll see a little bit, says, there's so much deep significance in why God chooses all the aspects that he chooses that's even beyond our comprehension to try to understand it. But nevertheless, we need to find some symbolism and what we can learn from it. So question number two is, what is the symbolism in the various items used in order to purify a person with leprosy? And then finally, question number three, and I think this is a question that has to affect us as individuals, reading this parasha since we don't have Tzaraat today, is what is the psychological factor that leads a person to speak Lashon Hara? Why is it that you find people who are very careful about Shabbos, and they're very careful about Kashrut, and they're very careful about a lot of laws? When it comes to Lashon Hara, suddenly, it just falls by the wayside. It becomes far too difficult, and we all fall into the same pitfall. Certain things I can handle, no matter how difficult they are, but Lashon Hara, that's like beyond me. What is it about Lashon Hara that, on a deeper root level, makes it so difficult for us to control this aspect? And alongside that, what's the tikkun? How can we work on perfecting these two areas that seem so difficult? What can we go through? What process that can make us a little bit more attuned as people not to speak Lashon Hara? And all of these answers clearly are going to be based from this parsha, or these parshas. Two approaches for the morning. Approach number one is an approach based on the writings of Rabbi Katz in the book World Mask. And he says the following in source four. There are two expressions of the theme of bris of covenant in the body. There's the bris hama'or, the circumcision, which is the beginning of our parasha, which is what I will not focus in on, and the bris halashon, the covenant of the tongue. Both are creative, both are energies of connection, and both must be used carefully and loyally. The function of speech parallels the function of reproduction in the lower worlds of the body. The output is offspring, the physical being of a child. In the higher worlds of the head, the output is words. And just as children are an outward expression of the body of the parent, so too words are the outward expression of the mind of the speaker. Words are seminal. When correctly used, they are a deep revelation of their source in the consciousness of the one who speaks them. And their energy is powerful enough to build a deep connection between the speaker and the one who listens. With the body, one forms children. With the power of communication, one creates talmidim, students. I think this is a fascinating connection between the two. Why, on the first level, are the two laws connected? The answer is very simple. The Torah is trying to underscore for us that just like people have the ability to create offspring, they have the ability to create children, which we're all familiar with, there is a tremendous power in an individual to create with a different part of their body, also offspring, also a connection that comes from self, also from a very deep part of self, and that is with a person's mouth, with words, a person has the ability to create talmidim, students. This is the description by Avram and Sarah. The pasuk tells us, "V'tanefesh asher asu b'charan," and the souls that they made in Haran. Well, they didn't have any children when they were in Haran. What are the souls that they made? This is none other than the people that they influenced to come under Kanfei Ashrina, to come under God's wings, to believe in a monotheistic religion. And that's why he says in 6 that making souls in the spiritual sense is a more significant creative act than its physical counterpart of bringing children into the physical world. And that's why it's a famous halacha that at times you honor your teacher more than you honor your parent. Because the father brings the child into this world, but the Rebbe, the teacher, brings the child into the next world. So we put the two together, the birth process as well as the process of Lashon Hara, or really the power of speech, side by side to show you that there is an inherent connection. The connection is the concept of bris, of covenant, of the ability to create both with one's physical body, and one has the ability to create with one's words. With one's words. We see this, if we turn to the next page, in Source 9, Rav Wolvi and Alei Shur, where he speaks about a very famous pasuk in Amos. The pasuk says, it's the second paragraph, Ki hine yotzer harim uvorei ruach umagin la'adam ma'asicho. Pasuk in describing Kadosh Baruch Hu, in describing God, says that God is the creator of mountains. He creates winds, and he tells the person ma'asicho what his conversation is. And on this, the Gemara says, even the conversation between husband and wife, the casual conversation between husband and wife, magidin lo b'shat hadin, will be told to the person at the time of judgment. The very famous Rav Chaim of Elazhin, the Nefesh HaChaim on this. And he says, you don't understand the power of words. The power of words has the ability to create or to destroy worlds. You don't know by one comment that you make what effect that comment has. This is the concept that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Yotzer Harim Uborei Ruach. He is the creator of everything and tells the person that which they're speaking. It's really one theme of the pasuk. Speech itself is a form of creation. Speech itself has a power, just like creating a child. Words create student. Words create worlds. Worlds of either construction or worlds of destruction. There's a tremendous power. Brit kutra lasfatayim. There's a tremendous power that's given in the mouth. That's why we're so careful. Be careful what comes out of your mouth. Because that which comes out of your mouth creates a certain reality. Two short stories. One's a story about the Chafetz Chaim. Very famous story, but the power of the story needs to be reminded. The story is that Chafetz Chaim was going with another Rav, another rabbi, to a certain trip somewhere, and they stopped off at an inn to have lunch. So they're eating lunch, and the innkeeper, who knows that she has two prominent rabbis, comes over and says, how's the food? Chafetz Chaim says, very good. Thank you very much. It's delicious food. She turns to the other rabbi, and are you enjoying your meal? He says, yes, it's very good, but it could have used a little bit more salt. And she leaves. The Chafetz Chaim turns white. He says, my whole life I've been so careful not to be around people who speak Lashon Hara. And here I am with you, such a prominent person, and you, in front of me, started speaking Lashon Hara? And the rabbi looked at him and said, all I said was it needs a little bit more salt. Explain the Chafetz Chaim, do you understand what happened because of that remark? What's going to happen right now is the innkeeper's going to go into the cook. And she's now going to repeat the comment that you made about her, that her cooking isn't good enough, which is one problem. And she's probably going to start yelling at the cook. And 9 times out of 10, the cook is going to be an almana, is going to be a widow, and that's oppressing a widow. And then they're going to exchange harsh words, no, I put enough salt, I tasted it myself, and they're going to enter an argument. And your one little comment is going to cause a whole tremendous, who knows, she might even be fired. So the rabbi said, come on, give me a break. All that because of just a little bit more salt? Chafetz Chaim says, you don't believe me? Come. They walked into the kitchen, and what was going on? The innkeeper was crying, the cook was crying, they're screaming at each other, and the rabbi understood the depth of what the Chafetz Chaim was saying and immediately apologized and said, don't worry, the food was fine, and reconciled the situation. A little bit more salt. One phrase can build or destroy worlds whether we understand it or not. A contemporary story of a teacher of mine who related the story and made a tremendous impression on me. She explained to us that her sister, her younger sister, never danced at any simcha until she got married. And her own simcha, she danced. And her sister, all these years, anytime they'd go to bar mitzvah or wedding, she never danced. She figured her sister didn't know how to dance. So, you know, that's why she sat on the side. But at her own wedding, she saw her sister was an amazing dancer. So she said, why haven't you been dancing all of these years at all the simchas we've been at? So listen carefully. The sister responded and said, when I was 5 years old, it was a Hanukkah play, I don't know, some play in school. As I was getting off the stage after my performance, I tripped on a step. And my teacher said to me, you klutz. And ever since then, I believed that I was a klutz. And if I'm a klutz, how could I possibly know how to dance? It sounds like a silly story. One word could affect somebody's life like that. But if we look honestly into our own lives, we see the truth of the statement. We say things to people. We know ourselves, statements that were made to us that we carry around for years. What an impression, what an impact they have. Words create and build worlds. That's the power of what words have. The parsha, by connecting these two ideas, is teaching this profound lesson. Don't underestimate the power of words. Words have the power to create. Words have the power to build or destroy worlds. Now, if this is so, we can now understand, perhaps on one level, what is the psychological reason why a person is driven to speak Lashon Hara? And the answer is very simply, a person doesn't understand this lesson of words. And what generally happens is, if a person isn't cognizant of the power that words have, a person will so often come to just talk and talk and talk and talk, and what we call Dvarim B'Teilim, useless talk, and that will lead a person to then speak Lashon Hara. Let's develop this idea. There's a wonderful Rashi that asks, why were birds taken as part of the ceremony of purification? Source 10. Because his affliction came in punishment for the chatter of gossip and slander. His purification is affected by means of chirping, twittering birds. What does this person who spoke negatively have in common with a bird? It's called chitter chatter. How birds twirp and tweep and whatever they do all day. This was the inherent problem in the person who spoke Lashon Hara. And the Asher HaKadosh sees this even more deeply in the imagery of the cedar tree. He says in Source 11, second line, Shehu eitz bilti ose pri, lo shel tam velo shel reyach. What's unique about a cedar tree is that it doesn't produce fruit. It's just there. That's the concept of speaking, but your words are not creating anything in particular. It's just speech for speech's sake. And here Rabbi Katz has a wonderful insight into this in Source 13. He says there's a particular problem in wasting words, even when the words spoken are not false or intrinsically sinful. I'm not here talking about even speaking Lashon Hara, shooting the breeze, just chattering about life, which a lot of us do. There's a problem with that as well. Why? So he says, in general, this is part of the problem of wasting any human resource. Any time or effort wasted in a human life is wastage of that life itself and therefore a very serious matter. But there's another problem with Dvarim B'Teilim, and that is that wasted and meaningless words present a picture of that which has no inner dimension. And this is no less a betrayal. Words are given in order to reveal meaning, to clothe a deeper reality. Empty nonsense betrays the very fact that there's a depth at all. If we understand that there's a power to words, and we understand that words create reality, if a person's going to sit around and not talk about anything, you're taking a very powerful medium in order to create, and it's not as if you're doing something neutral, you're really doing something negative. You're betraying that which intrinsically has the power to create. You're taking power and wasting it. And he says, and it's almost scary and perhaps better not to know this, but we'll be intellectually honest here today, Source 14, that the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, states that the consequence of wasted words is a particular suffering in the next world called Kaf HaKela, the cup of the slingshot. A neshama, a soul, which must endure that particular suffering as a result of wasting words, experiences the sensation of being flung from one place to another. But before arriving at that destination, is flung again in another direction, and so on. The Gaon says that for every empty statement, that's a pretty powerful statement, for every empty statement, a person must be flung from one end of the world to the other. There's an experience of constant traveling towards a goal, but never arriving. This is the reality generated by a life which used the tools of human growth for nothing other than their own sake, wasted creative energies. And that's why talking constantly but not saying anything, the version of such a life which is reflected in the next world, the world of reality, is the experience of moving but not arriving. The inherent problem in a person who's going to speak Lashon Hara is a person who's not sensitive to the concept of words. And if you're not sensitive to the concept of words, you're just going to speak endlessly. And we know that the more you speak, the more prone a person is to interject things that aren't positive. And that's why Rabbi Yerucham Halevi in Das Torah, source number 12, says that if a person would know that what makes us different from animals is the fact that we have a nefesh chaya, a living soul, which the Aramaic translation, very famous, explains as a ruach memalala, the power of speech, that is what differentiates us between animals. The ability to communicate is what makes us special. It's what makes us godly. It's the godly aspect within us. You take that away, you don't use that power of speech correctly, so then you're no better than an animal, than that little twerping bird who just twerps all day and says nothing. How do we rectify this? So there's a fascinating insight of Rav Wolbe. And I think we can connect it to part of the purification process of the Mitzvah. One of the major aspects that happens to a person who has Tzaraat is Source 16, that all the days that the affliction is upon him, he shall remain contaminated. He is contaminated. He shall dwell in isolation. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. And at first glance, this seems to be a bit harsh. It's basically solitary confinement. You know, you're living all by yourself. So why are we doing it to such a person? Why are we making him stay all by himself? And if anyone comes near him, he says, Tame, Tame, I'm impure, stay away from me. He really has to be by himself for a minimum of a week, sometimes longer. It's a period of time. Why? Because that's part of this process. You want to know how to counteract the problem of speaking endlessly? The antidote is one word, and that is silence. Silence. Learn how to be quiet. learn how to appreciate the value of words. Have no one to talk to. Have no one to talk to. And that's what Rav Wolpe says, and it's very powerful. He says in source number 18, he says, Min az shatinok, second line, yodea ledaber, from the moment that a child learns how to talk. And it's always very exciting, right? We always encourage children to say this word and then that word. It's something that parents encourage within children. Once a child starts to jibber-jabber, there's no end, right? The kid is just, you know, talking all the time. He says, ultimately, the child is going to, to speak more coherently and have what to say. He says, but in reality, you don't need to teach a child how to speak. The child will learn how to speak. He says, lishtok sarich lilmot. You have to teach the child how to be quiet. How to be quiet. Ki hashtika hu umnut gudola. It's a major item to learn. Bidafka ba nikar habar dat. You want to know who a great person is? It's a person who knows when and how to speak. It's not the person who's eloquent in speech. That's not the wise person. It's a person who knows when not to speak. That's the wisdom. So we've developed, if we would say, portrayal number one of our parsha, the connection between the two is the concept of a bris of covenant, the power of creation, the power of words, what words have the ability to do. Part of the problem of the Mitzorah is someone who cannot appreciate the power of words and therefore will spend all day just chitter-chattering and not creating anything. And part of the problem, if you're going to do that, is you're going to fall into the pitfall of speaking negatively about a person. It's doomed to happen if you have no control of speech. The antidote is badan yeshay, sit by yourself and learn how to be quiet. Learn how and when to talk. Think before you speak. That's level number one of the Mitzorah. Let's take a look at level number two. Level number two, if level number one is the concept of bris of covenant, level number two would be the concept of siluk hashchina, God's presence leaving, and God's presence leaving as an automatic process. Let's explain. We know that any time there is no kedusha, there is no holiness, or holiness is taken away, what automatically steps into place is tuma, is impurity. Right? We know in life there is no vacuum. That's that famous Rashi by Yosef, v'habur reik ein bo mayim. The boor was empty, the pit was empty, there was no water. So Rashi immediately says, nechashim v'akravim yeshbo. There was snakes and scorpions. Why is Rashi telling us this? It's a very major principle that nothing is empty in life. If there is no water, so there'll be snakes and scorpions. If you're going to empty yourself of one thing, something else is bound to come in. If Kedusha is taken away, so Tuma steps in, impurity steps in. And that's why, Rachman Lusan, someone dies, so there are via Vos HaTuma, when the Neshama, when the soul leaves, so then that's why they become the highest level of impurity, because the soul represents the purity aspect. Having said this, I'd like to share in source 21, Kutzkervort, also the father of the Shemi Shmuel, it's found in the Shemi Shmuel, of why is a woman who gives birth impure? It is a very profound and I think beautiful idea, and I think one that should be shared with all expectant mothers. And that is, we know that the Gemara tells us that there are three keys that are in the hands of God that He does not give over to emissaries, to give over to any shaliach. That's the key of rain, the key of tchiyas hameisim, the key of resurrection, and the key of chaya, the key of childbirth. So he says very simply, at the moment that a child is born, God is involved in the key of childbirth. Shehaya shore inyan eloki hainu mateach shel chaya. she'enenu nimsar biyad ha-shaliach el ha-kadosh baruch hu ba'atzmo hu ha-poteach. The moment the child is born, God himself, b'chvodo ba'atzmo, is found at that moment to give the child its soul, to give over the key of life. It's a very powerful moment of gilui shchina, of revelation of godliness. It's a very, very powerful time of prayer, because God is found at that moment when the child is born. Once the child is born, what happens? V'charkach kishnistaleka inyan eloki zesharim lumato kochot hatuma. Once God leaves, automatically impurity has to step in. There was such a strong force of purity that at the moment the child is born, the automatic result of the child being born and God leaving is the impurity. It's almost a positive view of the way to look at the impurity of a woman. Not that she gave birth, oh, now she's impure. I think it's a much more positive view. It's that why is she impure? Because she gave birth and had such a profound relationship and such a profound experience of godliness at that moment. Now that that moment is gone, the automatic result has to be impurity, and the impurity comes from the fact that it was such an intense moment of purity that came beforehand. Just to add in parentheses, that's why there are those that explain why for a girl it's double the amount of time than for a boy. Because we know when a girl is born, she has the potential to have more children as well. It's as if God is not only leaving this particular child, but he's also leaving the potential children that this young lady is going to have in the future. It's like a double amount of tumah. And where I saw the power of the words of Chazal is when our little one was born. So it must have been the first day of her life. And if any of you have girls, I'm sure you went through the same experience, is that you will find in her diaper blood as well. I don't know if any of you have had this experience, which we had, which is common. Too long ago. Which is common because of the hormonal changes. They tell you not to be afraid of that, because this is something that happened. You see the power of Chazal? At the moment the child is being born, she has already working through her system the fact that Amir Tashem one day, she will be giving birth to others as well. So the Hashba Eloki, the divine influence, is so to speak, double that's leaving. It's not only leaving at this moment, but the potential of when God will be back again for future children as well. If this is the positive aspect of the Siluk HaShchina, the divine presence leaving, the next part of the Parsha is the negative aspect of Siluk HaShchina, when we ourselves drive away God. At this part of the Parsha, God is driven away in a positive respect, so to speak. The end of the Parsha of Lashon Hara is how we drive away God when we speak Lashon Hara. It's an automatic result. And we see this in Rabbi Leff in his book, Outlook and Insight, points this out by Miriam. We know there's a inyan as one of the six zechiros, the six things we remember every day. We remember what happened to Miriam when she left Egypt, that she got struck by leprosy. So it's almost a little bit strange that, you know, why are we picking on poor Miriam here, that we remember her every day? You know, it seems almost unfair. So he says his very following in Source 22. The answer is that Miriam did not sin. Her intentions in speaking about Moshe were completely well-intentioned, without any malice. She meant no harm to her beloved brother, nor did she cause Moshe any harm or even ill feeling. Despite this, she was stricken with saraf. Her disease was not a punishment, but rather the inevitable natural result of Lashon Hara. And the biggest proof of this, because she had not sinned, Moshe did not pray for forgiveness from Miriam, only that she should be healed. Had she sinned, he should have prayed that God should forgive her. And what he says is so beautiful, as he says in 23, just as it makes no difference if one swallows poison intentionally or unintentionally, poison has been swallowed, so too Lashon Hara devastates us even when spoken without deliberate malice. This is the power of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is the automatic sarat, the automatic leprosy, the tumah, the impurity that comes to a person when speaking Lashon Hara, is our ability to drive away God. That's what happens when we speak Lashon Hara. And we see this in a powerful insight that the Or Gedaliah brings down. We know that there are different elements in the world. The lowest element is called domain, the inanimate, and then you have Someach, life, and then you have Chai, which is, Someach is growth, things that are growing like plants, then you have Chai, things that are alive, and then the highest level is Medaber, one who speaks. So he says the following. If a person would take a scissors and cut off the root of a plant, what happens to the plant? Now down to the next level of domain. It's not inanimate, it's dead. You take away the soul of an animal, what happens to it? It's dead. You take away the medaber aspect, the speaking aspect, we too lose a sense of our humanity. That's the natural result of not using our words properly. It's driving away the Shechina, driving away the Lashon Hara. Where we see the power of God and speech is in the next page, again, Rav Wolbe, where he says that the Mishnah tells us that if two people are sitting and learning Torah, then Shechina Shvuya B'neihem, source 29, then God's presence is among them. If one person is sitting and learning Torah, then he gets a reward. So he quotes the Maharal that says, look at the language. If two people are sitting and learning Torah, then they're exchanging words between them. They have the Shechina on them, the divine presence on them. If you're sitting by yourself, you get a reward, but you don't necessarily get divine presence. Why not? Because when you sit alone, you usually don't talk to yourself. Speech has the power of bringing down divine presence into this world. You're going to misuse that speech. You're driving away the divine presence. And that's why he quotes a very interesting pasuk, the end of Source 30, where the verse says that God, Ki Hashem Elokecha, four lines from the bottom, Mitalech bekerav machanecha, walks among your camp to save you, and your camp should be holy. And the end of the pasuk is, V'lo yir'ebecha ervat davar v'sham mecharecha. God shouldn't see, and literally ervat davar is some ervat, some type of nakedness, some type of something which is improper, and then God will leave you. And that's normally, and within context, means that you should, you know, build facilities in a traveling camp, that you can go to the bathroom, and that things should be done in a private sort of way. But the Targum Onkelos says, what is ervat davar? It's aveirat pitgam, that you shouldn't speak negatively, because by doing so, you're driving away the Shechina. Speech has the ability to bring God closer to you. Misusing speech, it's not, oh, I've just misused my speech. It's the connection in the parsha. It's the automatic result of siluk ha-Shechina. You lose the divine presence. God likes to be close. He likes ahava and achva. God likes closeness and love. If you're going to create paywood, you're going to create divisiveness, then you've created a situation where you've lost the divine presence on you. And that's why you sit by yourself and mourn. You're mourning for the loss of the Shechina, the loss of divine presence on you. Now, what's the root cause of this and how can we rectify this? So the Mefarshim explain is that a person who speaks about others so casually has a certain component of haughtiness to them, that they think they know everything. And that's why the Geren HaRamban in Letters to All Ages says so beautifully, 33, when your actions display genuine humility, when you stand meekly before man and fearfully before God, when you stand weary of sin, then the spirit of God's presence will rest upon you. And this is the cedar wood. 34b, because it grows tall, imposing, and wide, the cedar symbolizes haughtiness. The cedar wood was chosen because it represents a type of gaiva. It's a very strong tree. This is a person's problem. They're haughty. They think they know everything. The way to counteract this effect is to learn a little humility. Where do we see this in the parsha? Two places. One, when a person has a wound, a nega, on his house, on his clothes, on his body, he has to go to a priest, and he has to say the following word. I've seen something ka nega. it appears to me to be a nega. So explains Lumdani San beautifully. Why do they just say, hey, I have a wound? Why do they say it appears to me to be? Because this is your problem in life. You've decided in everything. This person did that, and that person did this, and I know for sure this happened, and I know for sure that happened. A person who constantly speaks about others is a very judgmental person, who knows clearly this is what happened and why this happened. What are we going to do to counteract that? You're not so smart. It's kanega, one letter. It appears to me, but I don't know for certain because I am not in a position to determine what actually is correct or not, what actually happened or not. It's a teaching method rectifying the problem of thinking you know it all. And finally, last point, and I think that this is the second point we should go home with today. Says Lumdani San, it's very important as part of the process that not that the priest goes to the person, but that the person goes to the priest. And if you look at the language in this week's parsha, you'll see that at first it says vehuva, he is brought to the priest, which means others drag him along. And then later in the parsha it says uva, he comes of his own volition. What any person who thinks he's so great and thinks he knows everything, such a person will never want to get advice from others. Such a person will never seek counsel from others. They know everything. Why should I ask anybody for advice? What are they going to tell me that I don't know? I know everything. The real way to rectify such a person is to realize that perhaps you don't know everything. Perhaps you have to lower yourself to seek counsel from someone else. And that's why in the beginning he has to be brought, swept along. He doesn't want to go. And then ultimately he himself understands that in order to really rectify who he is as an individual, he is going to go from his own volition to seek out counsel from the priest. And I think that this is the second level that we've seen today, is that speaking has the automatic process of siluk hashchina. Just like a woman who gives birth to a child, automatically God leaves tuma, impurity steps in. Understand that when you speak negatively about somebody, you're taking away the divine presence on a person. Speech has the ability to bring God's presence upon you. Misusing speech takes it away. Perhaps the root of the problem is that you think that you know everything and therefore you can speak about others any way you want. The cedar wood, this idea of haughtiness, the way to rectify it is kanega, you're not quite sure if it's a wound or not. And even more deeply, you yourself have to go and seek counsel to the Kohen, to the priest, and you can't say in life, I know everything. And I think that these are the two messages of the parasha for us when reading it. We should understand the power of speech, the power of creation, the power of the ability to bring down the divine presence upon us, to look in our own lives and see, is there ways that we can understand and appreciate the concept of silence and learning when and how to speak, and also not to be so quick, to be so judgmental, and that we know everything, but to allow ourselves to have that room of perhaps we don't know everything, and this is manifested in the fact that a person throughout their lives will always seek counsel from other people and always be ready to hear advice from others, which really reflects that they perhaps don't know everything, but they're willing to learn from others and aren't quick to judge other people as well.